Hello, and welcome to a special episode of The Kicker. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch. On Tuesday night, police officers in riot gear swept through the campus of Columbia University, clearing a building that had been taken over by mostly student protesters and arresting more than 100 people. The raid was the dramatic culmination of weeks of disruption and dissent on campus over the ongoing war in Gaza. Protesters camped out on the central lawn of the school, demanding an end to the conflict, and for Columbia to eliminate its economic and academic ties to Israel. Administrators saw the protests as a threat to campus safety and the normal operations of the school, including final exams and the upcoming graduation ceremonies. This was the second time they called in the police to sweep out demonstrators. There's a lot of things to say about what happened on campus, but the Columbia Journalism Review, where I work, is focused on the press, how it's treated, and how it conducts itself. And there's a lot to say about that, too. My guest today, Jelani Cobb, is the dean of the journalism school. He is, in a sense, my boss, because CJR is part of the school, although I will say we are editorially independent. But I wanted to talk to Dean Cobb because he's been right in the middle of everything that's gone down here, including the work of Columbia's many impressive student journalists. This conversation took place on Friday, May 3rd. Dean Jelani Cobb, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, it's Friday afternoon now. Have you had a chance to catch your breath and take stock of what this week has been like?
No, not really. We've been on the go pretty much nonstop. And even after all the events that took place, you know, mainly the NYPD coming to campus and removing the encampment of the students who've been protesting, you know, we then switched into the next mode, you know, dealing with all the implications of that and, you know, making sure that my students here at the journalism school have everything they need. So, you know, it's really been a blur of activity since then.
Maybe we can go back to Tuesday night, because obviously that was a pretty dramatic night when the NYPD showed up on campus in full riot gear. And you were, to some extent, in the middle of that, at least as far as the journalism school is concerned. You were in Pulitzer Hall with student journalists. What happened in there?
In order, I guess, to get... you know, what happened on Tuesday night, I have to give a little bit of context.
Sure.
Which is that we stood up a newsroom on the main floor of Pulitzer Hall, just off the lobby in the Brown Center. And so we had, at varying points, many of our students, journalism students, and sometimes people from The Spectator, which is a student newspaper here at Columbia, other times people from the radio station, WKCR were here. And so that became the kind of reporting hub, you know, people in and out of the building. So when we got word on Tuesday evening that there was going to be a police presence, well, we really saw it before we heard it. And officers began amassing outside the gates on three sides of the campus. You know, it really became pretty obvious to people that we needed to head out and that if you were covering it, you need to grab your camera, grab your equipment. You know, that's how things started Tuesday evening.
Yeah. And I think that maybe, you know, some people in the general public were introduced to The Spectator and introduced to WKCR that particular night because their work was so impressive.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, sir. NYPD is clearing out standards, as well as student press, are all being asked to clear quite a ways away, might I add. NYPD is now pushing us almost at the entrance of Hartley. But anyone who cannot enter Hartley Hall will probably be pushed back.
David, I'm sorry. I got to interrupt. They are entering the encampment now. I know Sawyer reported on this before, but me and McKenna are atop the ledge right now. We see we have a little bit of height on the west lawn. And yeah, they are searching tents right now, it seems. There is about a crowd of, I'd say, 30 or 40 police officers with, again, batons and zip ties. Again, no email from Shafiq by any means. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Ian. I just wanted to ask, do we have a field reporter?
I know the graduate student body has also, we've seen their work now all over the country, frankly. What was your impression of how the student journalists were handling that moment?
It was amazing, quite honestly. One of the things was that how little guidance they needed. Hmm. You know, they were checking in with faculty and you know, there were people from, you know, both staff and faculty here at Columbia who were there to advise them. But they were very self-motivated, and they were out there shooting footage, you know, taking photos, you know, conducting interviews, doing, you know, everything that, you know, professional journalists should be doing in a scenario like that. And I was consistently impressed. I know my colleagues on the faculty were consistently impressed. The readers and viewers and listeners gave them high marks as well. And so it was just an amazing thing to witness. And I've never been prouder than now. You know, I've never been prouder of a group of students than I am now.
Yeah, and I can't imagine you expected this would be something you'd be doing when you took this job too.
Yeah, I did not expect this. You know, as I said, this was not in the orientation manual.
yeah.
But, you know, it was a moment when, you know, when you have a crisis, your organization will either pull together or pull apart. And our organization came together in some fundamental ways. And so we're very, you know, happy to see that.
Can you talk a little bit about that night? I mean, there's reports out there. I mean, I think one thing maybe the general public may not fully understand is it was very hard to get on campus. I have access to the campus, but I couldn't have gotten on. There seems like there was quite a lot of work that went into creating space for students to stay on campus, to have access to the J School building.
Mm-hmm.
What went into that, and what was it like to be sort of in this sort of exclusive kind of locked down space?
So the campus went into lockdown mode ahead of the police arrival. It may have been in that mode in various points of the occupation and protest anyway. It went into a more serious level of it where people could not get access to buildings. Even I, at some points, could not get access to Pulitzer Hall around the dean. And, you know, the students who were inside organize themselves to make sure that there would always be someone at the door if other journalists wanted to come in, since they had to get to the Brown Center to charge their phones, charge their cameras, to do all of the things that, you know, covering a story required. And so there was that. And it was kind of like almost a cocoon because all sorts of other things were going on outside. And, you know, there were very few people on campus by that point anyway, because it had been increasingly difficult, as you point out, for people to get on. And, you know, all of the gates had been closed. Only the entrance at 116th and Amsterdam Avenue was letting people in selectively, I should say, very selectively. And then we start seeing, I guess, around 7 p.m., we start seeing police drones, or what we presume to be police drones, hovering over the campus. I think we're between 4 and 6 of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, that prefaced the previous time. The police had been called to campus on April 18th, you know, 12 days earlier. So when we saw the drones go up again, we're like, okay, this is probably ahead of whatever tactical maneuvers they're going to do next. And, you know, they came in after nightfall, you know, after 8 p.m. with, I'm not good at estimating, but I would suspect that it was around 1,000 officers.
I saw them. I was on the street outside. I watched them walk up Broadway in just these phalanxes. It was an incredible show of force, whatever the actual number was.
I suspect, I mean, I can't, you know, put words in their mouth or explain, but the last time they were here on the 18th, they removed the encampment from campus and the encampment set up again within an hour.
Right.
And so, and the police who came were outnumbered by the protesters. So I think that they just brought a large force because they wanted to outnumber, you know, whatever number of people were inside the campus, or presumably. That was the calculation that I made about it.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, they came in through two different directions. You know, one was the 114th Street side of campus, which is, you know, the southern end of Columbia's campus, of the main campus. And also they breached a window into Hamilton Hall.
Yes.
From Amsterdam Avenue.
Yes, this famous picture of them walking on kind of stepladder thing.
Yeah, that was the image that a lot of people saw.
Yeah.
And so they kind of caught the protesters in Hamilton Hall in a kind of vice, because there were officers coming up from the south and also in from the east at the same time.
Yeah. As far as what the NYPD was doing with the reporters who were on campus, because I was watching, so obviously I was listening to WKCR like so many people. I was also watching CNN, which had a journalism grad student who was reporting live on the air. And I watched as the police approached Hamilton Hall, they essentially moved her and everyone who was there, all of the witnesses, all of the reporters who were there off campus. It seemed like the mission was no eyes around right now. Did your reporters have a similar experience? Were they able to go out and see things, or did they also have to sort of stay locked down?
So everyone in Pulitzer Hall and the Brown Center went out to report. A good number of them were swept off campus or swept into buildings where they were made to remain for multiple hours. And that was the same thing that you were talking about, where it was kind of removal of all the eyes and in close proximity to where the police operation was taking place. I didn't personally feel like that was necessary or warranted. And I'm always suspicious when people begin removing journalists from areas where, you know, any kind of government operation, be it police or anything else, is taking place. And so that was, you know, what was happening simultaneously. So about maybe a third, maybe even more, of the students who had been in the newsroom wound up being, if not pushed off completely off campus, then sequestered in some place where they couldn't have an easy view of what was happening at Hamilton Hall.
Yeah. And then as far as the ones who were still in the building, there were some tweets that circulated. I might as well ask you about this, that you or others were specifically threatened with, you know, arrest if you actually stepped outside. Was there any truth to that?
I mean, it's true, but it's not specific, you know? There was a threat of arrest made to a group of people in my general vicinity and me, I suppose, too, because I was, you know, it was applicable to me. But it wasn't like the police singled me out and said, I'm going to arrest you if you come outside. It was said that if anyone came outside, they would be arrested.
Gotcha.
Which was kind of a moot point because the people were coming inside in the first place.
These were people also, who were trying to get in, you're saying.
Yeah, these were students. Uh-huh. But I think that would have been a point of contention because, you know, if it had been the opposite, you can't tell press that you're going to arrest them. Or rather, you know, it's not defensible to tell press that you will arrest them for doing nothing more than standing someplace and reporting what police are doing.
Right. I mean, it's a very tricky situation because to some extent, the police can say, we're just endorsing and following university policy that all students need to be inside right now. This has nothing to do with press. These are just students. You're in a position as the dean of the J School to say, well, hold on. These individuals are wearing their journalist hat right now. Some of us are professional journalists in addition to teachers and deans. There's a real constitutional issue about whether we can be actually out.
Exactly. You know, that took place, I should be clear, that took place in front of the journalism school. There were other efforts to move people away from the West Lawn, which is where the encampment was, when people saw images of the tents and the occupation, that was, you know, most of the time, unless you saw it on the 17th, after the 17th, April 17th, the encampment was on the West Lawn. And that happened there as well. So
yeah,
there were multiple areas where people were having a difficult time maintaining a presence and reporting.
You have maybe people don't know this, but you do wear a couple hats at the school. You are a dean, which means you're in part of the administration. You're also the dean of the journalism school, and you are a journalist and a staff writer at The New Yorker. At some point, it seems like you made a decision earlier than all of this, when the university first said that they were going to limit access to the campus. At some point, a tweet went out from the journalism school saying, if you're having a hard time getting in, if you're outside press, let us know and we'll help you. Why did you decide to do that? And was that a tricky decision to make?
Not really. It wasn't really a tricky decision to make because the journalism school, you know, we obviously believe in freedom of the press. You know, that's fundamental. It'd be very difficult to have a journalism school that did not believe in that. And, you know, we were just operating on our principles and trying to facilitate coverage. And part of it was that, you know, we later heard that public affairs didn't have the resources to actually handle that at the time. They had 50 other things going on. Mm-hmm. So if we could step into that void and help, you know, by facilitating access, then, you know, we were happy to do that.
And I think it made a big difference. I mean, I happened to be outside at some point when some reporters who couldn't get in were helped in. And I think this is a couple of days before the raid, but it seemed to be a consistent issue that the journalism school played a significant role in.
Well, I guess what I would say is that the journalism school, we have just been trying to operate on the basis of our principles. Yeah, that's all I'll say.
Okay. I've heard that you were, to some extent, involved, this is the other hat, with some of the negotiations that were taking place. Is that something you can talk about at all?
I can say that I was involved in the negotiations. I can't talk about like any particulars because some of those things are still like under contention or still conversations that might possibly happen. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you feel like the way this all went down? I mean, now I know it's a little early to look back on it, but what's your takeaway?
It's frustrating because we exerted a lot of effort in trying to get to a common place and to work out a deal that would have preempted the return of the police. And we just couldn't get there. And so we spent 10 days. We made a lot of progress, but, you know, not enough in the end.
Yeah. But what was it like for you to see police on? I mean, this is the third hat, Jelani Cobb, the human. What was it like for you to see the police showing up on the campus?
Oh, I didn't. It was, you know, it was terrible. Like I don't think anybody wanted to see that. And even you're talking to people in the administration who, you know, have a range of different opinions, but I didn't really hear anyone that thought it would be like wonderful or pleasant, you know, to see NYPD on campus. So, yeah, and I think that it's one of those things that is a defining visual, you know, for people who have seen the campus as a open environment and, you know, famously, you know, 116th Street, College Walk, you know, if you're trying to get from Broadway to Amsterdam or vice versa, you can just, you know, cut through the campus, you know, whether you are a student on the way to class or whether you are a community member on the way home from work or just a random person. And now it's the opposite, you know, for that moment, it was closed off and, you know, this is heavy police presence. So obviously that was jarring and striking.
What did you make of the national media, the outside media's coverage? I don't know that you had a lot of time to watch it, but I'm sure you've picked up on some of it.
Yeah, you know, honestly, we were we were living it, and when we weren't focused on living it, we were covering it. Yeah. So it made it kind of hard to gather any representative survey of like what the news coverage was. I do think that there were lines generally, like what I did see or read, the lines were a little bit more stark than they seemed to be in person. And maybe that's always the case.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, there was like the administration was not one thing. You know, there are people with various views inside the administration of what we should do, what the risks are, what the dangers are, what our responsibilities are, and so on. And like people are hashing things out. And my understanding was that there was the same sort of complexity on the other side with the students. And maybe you have to kind of use the stark frame. Here's the administration, here's the students, they have the protest and so on. But there was a lot more gray, in my estimation, than I saw detailed.
Mm, you mean in terms of how the sort of the top down, how the administration was choosing to handle things or the approach?
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it.
That's interesting. Because certainly I noticed in watching that the representation of the kids and whoever else might have been there, that's where I see the most sort of dramatic, stark representations from outside media and much more nuanced takes. I mean, WKCR, to their credit, in addition to having an excellent just live trial by fire all night on the air, they also had some pretty good reporting about who was actually inside the building.
And we have received word that lights are on the top floor of Hamilton, meaning that police have likely reached the top floor. We are unsure if all of the protesters from inside of Hamilton have
that
been,
if you flipped on one of the major networks, you got a very different and often just straight from the NYPD or the administration, this university administration's version of it. And I thought the nuance of the student reporters was very impressive, in stark contrast to the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think's the lesson for these students, whether they're the grad students or the undergrads? What's the takeaway of this experience?
You know, I don't know, actually. You know, my background is in history, and I think that, you know, on the history side of me, is that you have to let things settle before you can make honest assessments of them. And, you know, this transpired on the same day, the anniversary of the 1968 demonstration, the police arriving. You know, it was April 30th on both of those. And so and it began, you know, roughly around the same time that the 1985 demands for divestment from South Africa, you know, took place at Columbia. So those two, you know, the 1985 and 1968, were definitive parts of Columbia's history. And, you know, this might well be something that 30 years from now, undergrads hear about and say, oh, yeah, you know, I read about this or heard about this. And we could be looking at that kind of situation. What I will say is that I think we still have a lot, obviously a lot of division and a lot of, you know, questions and, you know, philosophical ones and practical ones, you know, and debates about the role of free speech and, you know, where it bleeds over into harassment or discrimination or intimidation and academic freedom. Like, you know, we have serious questions that we've raised, you know, in the faculty and various other places about what that really means and what responsibilities are incumbent upon the institution. So, thinking about all of those things, it really leaves it a very kind of unsettled place. Yeah. And so it'll take a while to figure out what the ultimate impact of this will be.
It just occurred to me, but you have the Pulitzers on Monday.
Yeah.
You know, the world of snarky tweets have suggested there's going to be, you know, people saying, how can Columbia University host the Pulitzers after calling in the police on their own students? I mean, do you see a tension there?
You know, I suspect people will have their opinions, but and I was also very happy to see the statement that the Pulitzer board made in support and recognition of the journalism done by the students at Columbia University, which they did just this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. And, you know, we'll continue to do the things that we do. And if people have criticism about that, you know, we'll listen and take that into under advisement, and we understand that people feel that way, and keep moving and keep doing the work.
What do you think as far as the journalists, the young journalists there? I mean, they're witnesses to history. What do you think they learned from this?
I think it's a demonstration of what they learned before this.
Mm.
Because they sprung into action. They were doing, so by, I should give some context, which is that, you know, the journalism school very famously throws people into the deep end. You get here, you have your orientation, and then you hit the streets and start reporting. In your first week, you know, as a student here, whether you know what you're doing or not, we'll give you some advice, we'll give you some assistance, but you're going to go out and talk to people and interview them and try to work on a story and all of those things. And then you do that again and again and again over the course of the year. And each with each iteration, you know, getting a little bit better, maybe a little bit less nervous, you know, having more principles and fundamentals under your belt. And it was really amazing to see all that come together. And I remember at one point when I was talking with two of my colleagues, Sheila Coronel and Bruce Shapiro, and I said, in no world could we design a final exam that would be this comprehensive.
I was about to ask if final exams are canceled for all of those students.
Yeah, no, they're not.
Okay. Sorry, guys.
There's still work. Yeah, there's still work to be done.
But that is a pretty remarkable final exam in a way, isn't it?
It is. I'm hesitant to give out extensions because, you know, you're supposed to have a deadline. But for people who are out there reporting, sometimes, you know, in 24-hour stints, I said, you know, I think we'll make an exception and give you an extension to file your stories for this week.
How does the school move forward now?
You know, there are a lot of things that we have to consider about this. You know, we do want to go back and look at comprehensively the coverage that we did, You know, we were kind of looking at it piece by piece by piece. And we want to recognize the journalists, both from our school, from The Spectator, and from KCR, for the work that they've done, you know, just, you know, astounding work. But in a real sense, we go out and do what we've always done. And, you know, there's the motto or mission statement, I should say, on the wall in the lobby of Pulitzer, which is to educate the next generation of journalists to uphold the standards of excellence in journalism. And that's what we'll be doing.
Dean Jelani Cobb, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us on a very, very busy week.
Thank you.
The Kicker is brought to you by the Columbia Journalism Review and produced by Amanda Dara. I'm your host, Josh Hirsch.